Good morning for two more minutes. Good morning. I grew up in a family that encouraged questions, welcomed challenges, and celebrated doubt. There was no question that was off limits. There was no subject that was too taboo. And as a result, my sister and I were like walking question marks. Who, what, where, when, why? In fact, if you were to ask my mom what her favorite story of my little sister is, it will always be the same story of my six-year-old little sister. I feel like, though, for you to appreciate the story, you need to see my sister when she was 6 years old. This is her, and me. Looks like we love each other. We don't. Just kidding. She's the littlest one, and she's just like a little cupcake of a girl. Her cheeks are just so pinchable. It's so cute. So now picture these two little girls. Our mom has just picked us up from school. We have bounced into the car, and immediately, without preamble or question, I launch into all of the details about my day. Oh, I did this, and I did that, and I ate this, and I ate that, and I played here, and I played there, and I just go on and on and on, because I talked a lot as a little girl. My sister is in the back, just stoic. Quiet. It's not unusual for my sister. My sister tends to be a little bit more cerebral, but something was different this day. So finally, I finished after a number of minutes, and my mom's like, awesome. And JC, how was your day? She thinks and she answers, good. And the car goes quiet. And we wait, and we wait, and we see the gears working in her head. Finally, she furrows her brows a little bit, and she says, Mom, if the world is spinning so fast, how come we don't fly off? Well. Right? 6 years old, the girl's a genius. Questions were very much welcomed in our family, so much so that my dad made sure from a very, very early age that we knew what to say if anyone tried to quench our curiosity. If someone tried to say, oh, you can't be curious because you know what happened to the cat, well, curiosity killed the cat. If anyone dared to tell us this, we were told from a very early age that we were to immediately respond, well, yeah, curiosity killed the cat, and satisfaction brought it back. Right? So good. Now you have a little bit of wisdom to take with you. Questions and challenges and all of those things were a part of me growing up. It turned me into every high school teacher's worst nightmare. I was the student who challenged all of my high school teachers. Oh, well, no, that's actually not correct. Sorry. Or, why can't I write in run-on sentences? Because you're having us read Charles Dickens and this entire page is one sentence. Or, why do I have to solve the math problem this way when I can solve it this much simpler, much more efficient way? Every teacher's worst nightmare. I gathered a reputation of being a little bit of a know-it-all, a little bit brash, so much so that I got comments quite frequently from teachers and from friends and even from my own mom. Oh, Mandy, you are such a Peter. And no one ever seemed to mean this as a compliment, except for maybe my mom, because she loves me and she has to love me. But no one ever seemed to mean this as a compliment. You see, we give Peter such a difficult time. Peter is the guy who is really slow in understanding. Peter is the guy who always acts and speaks before thinking. Peter is the guy who says all of the things you want to say, but know you shouldn't say it, and yet he says it anyways. Peter. And yet sometimes I wonder if we misinterpret Peter. especially since it is Peter who takes up a lot of the Gospels, one of the most mentioned disciples in the Gospel. So today, we sit at Peter's seat. It is the Last Supper. Peter doesn't know it's the Last Supper, but it is the Last Supper. Jesus has washed the disciples' feet. The Passover meal has finished. The bread has been passed. The wine has been served. The disciples have bickered over who would be the most honored disciple. Jesus has taught them, and now Jesus turns to Peter and says something that jolts him. Luke 22, verse 31. Simon, Simon, Simon Peter. Simon, Simon, Satan has asked to sift you all like wheat. But I have prayed for you, Simon, that your faith may not fail. And when you have turned back, strengthen your brothers. But he replied, Lord, I'm ready to go with you to prison and to death. And Jesus answered, I tell you, Peter, before the rooster crows today, you will deny three times that you know me. And it hurts. Imagine this from Peter's perspective. The shock, the pain. For years, Peter has lived alongside Jesus. And what an incredible few years it has been. It has been filled with questions and challenges and passion and vibrancy. I mean, Peter has some of the best stories with Jesus. The first major interaction Peter has with Jesus happens when he is coming back from a night spent fishing with James and John. They have labored and they have toiled all night to produce absolutely nothing. They come back and they're worn out, exhausted, and Jesus approaches them with a crowd behind him. And Jesus crawls into Peter's boat and begins to preach from Peter's boat. And I just imagine Peter kind of, oh my goodness, the rabbi is in my boat. He's teaching from my boat. And he watches as Jesus teaches the crowd. And as soon as Jesus finishes teaching, he turns to Peter and says, Peter, why don't you take the boat out and drop the net? To which Peter responds, well, because you tell me to do it, I will do it. But, and because Peter is never one to leave something unsaid, but you should know we've already tried this and it didn't work. But he takes out the boat, drops the net, and fish upon fish upon fish. And for the first time in my life, I can use this term correctly, a boatload of fish is caught. And Peter falls on his knees in awe and fear, and Jesus looks at him and says, well, you will be a fisherman of people. And Peter's life explodes with Jesus. Everywhere they go, town to town, village to village, there are crowds pressing in on Jesus. I imagine them yelling and screaming and praising and crying, just kind of this chaotic mess, beautiful and holy, all desperate to try and get to Jesus. In one of these moments, Jesus, surrounded by crowds, stops and says, whoa, someone touched me. And it's Peter who is exasperated. The way this plays out in my mind, I always picture Peter stepping back and being like, really? Someone touched you? Jesus, look around you. The world is trying to touch you. And Jesus says, no, no, I've touched someone and it's made a difference. And a woman comes forward who has bled for 12 years and has been healed by Jesus. And Peter watches as Jesus affirms this woman. And then there's the most famous Peter story. The disciples have gone on the lake ahead of Jesus, and it is nightfall, and in the distance they see a figure walking on the water. And the disciples freak out. They start yelling, "Oh my goodness, it's a ghost, it's a ghost!" Until they hear a familiar voice as Jesus says, "Wait, wait, wait, it's me, don't be afraid." Of course, it's Peter who responds, and Peter says, "Well, Jesus, if it's you, tell me to come walk on the water." Who thinks of that? Who thinks of that? Peter does clearly, and he says, "Jesus, tell me to walk on the water." Jesus says, "Okay, come, walk on the water." And Peter takes a step out of the boat, and he walks on the water. And then he has his own moment of freaking out, like, "Oh my goodness, I'm walking on the water and there's winds and there's waves and it's scary," and he starts to sink, and then he says, "Jesus, save me," and Jesus does. And then there's a moment later on where Jesus is talking to all of his disciples, and he asks, "Well, who do you think I am?" It's Peter who responds, "Well, Jesus, you're the Messiah." Jesus begins to talk about death and struggles, and Peter is deeply offended by this, so much so that he pulls Jesus away from the other disciples, rebukes him, and says, "Jesus, you can't say those things." To which Jesus says, "Oh, no, no, Peter, you have missed the point." You see, Peter's life is filled with these moments. It's filled with questions and challenges and doubts. It is vibrant. It is passionate. It is a life that is completely engaged with Jesus. It is discipleship. And so we join Peter at the sea at the Last Supper. Peter, having experienced it all, and he listens as Jesus says, "Peter, you will deny that you know me 3 times. And I can feel Peter's heart break. Of course, many of us know what happens in the next few hours: chaos. Much of which we will experience next week together at 4 Days with Jesus. But in this chaos, Peter's entire world comes crashing down. All of his hope, all of his dreams, all of his joy in Jesus is gone. And in the moment of his world falling apart, Peter cries out, "I don't know Jesus. I don't know Jesus. I don't know Jesus." And the rooster crows, and Peter weeps bitterly. And I get it. In the moments of our personal chaos, in the moments when our worlds fall apart, many of us lean into the challenging God, the doubting God, the questioning God, "Why?" And then shortly after, for many of us, a wave of overwhelming shame and guilt crashes on us because we feel that maybe we have betrayed God simply by asking. I was 14 years old when I began my questions. Is God good? Is God vengeful? Is God real? And despite growing up in a family that encouraged these types of questions, I was surrounded by a community that had told me I had abandoned God just by asking them. And I remember crying in my dad's arms, terrified. Is God mad at me? Have I left God? Traditionally, when we speak of Peter, we speak of either Peter's denial or we speak of Jesus predicting Peter's denial. However, we often neglect what Jesus said before both of these things. Let's look at it again. Luke 22, verse 32. I have prayed for you, Simon, that you would not fail in the faith. And when you turn back, strengthen your brothers. There are two things in here that are overwhelmingly powerful, and the first is the word and. So simple. Three-letter word in both the Greek and the English, actually. And. You see, if Jesus had said, I have prayed that you would turn back in the faith, but, we could understand Peter's denial as a failure of faith. But Jesus doesn't say that. Jesus says a non-judgmental and. You see, the questions and the challenges and the doubts aren't signs that we have failed in our faith. They aren't signs that we have left God, no. They are signs that we are engaging with and wrestling with God. And the beautiful thing is God is big enough for that. A mentor once told me that doubt is not the opposite of faith. Rather, doubt can be the tool by which our faith grows and matures. And many of us here are in places of questioning and challenging and doubting. Some of us question and they're lighthearted and they're fun questions, but others of us, we're asking the big, but why God challenges and the, are you real doubts? Others of us look around and we see our sisters and our brothers asking these questions and we don't quite understand because we're so sure. And yet, we can acknowledge that these questions are one, very real. And two, that by asking them, they are participating in a unique form of discipleship. That brings me to the second point. And when you turn back, strengthen your brothers. Some versions say strengthen, some say encourage, some say establish, some say support. But they all mean the same thing. Talk about it. You see, the second part is an invitation. It's an invitation to first dialogue and to second to share experience, something of which our La Sierra community deeply values. While we recognize that sharing, experiencing, and dialoguing is important, we also recognize two things. First, that if you are questioning, you are not questioning alone. And two, by attaching shame and guilt to questions, we are not creating people of better faith. We are only creating better fakers. As a community of this Jesus, we are called to embrace. Embrace the questions and to hold close the people who are asking them. Over the last few weeks in research, I stumbled across this video. This video shows random people on the streets of New York answering the question, if you could ask God one thing, what would it be? I invite you to watch and listen.
If I could ask God one question, what would it be? Oh, that's so tough.
I could ask God one question.
You're gonna make me cry.
Oh, you're good. That's a great question.
That's a very good question.
Don't quite have an answer, though. I don't know.
Oh my God. I don't know. That's a hard question. Oh, wow. God, are you really watching over all of us? And do you really have a plan for us? Or are we just making mistakes and accomplishing things and doing great things all on our own? Can we really take credit for those? And when things go bad, people say, where is God? So are you really there pulling the strings?
How did this all come about? What was the inception of the idea? This whole thing we call Earth?
Wow, that's an interesting question. I think it would be, did I do a good job?
I would say the question I would ask him is, why me?
If I was to ask God one question, it would be, what would true love be and how can I embody that?
If I had one question, I think it would be why, because I think that would lead to a long discussion of a lot of things.
Do you exist? Like, why is there so much hatred?
Am I going to heaven?
I would ask for forgiveness.
I think I'd like to understand what is the purpose of all the wars.
Should be good.
What's his intention there? What's God's intention? Like, why are we fighting so much?
If I met God, I would ask him, why did he create mosquitoes?
Why are humans so ugly towards each other, especially now?
Why do so many people hate each other?
How can I do for others?
Is there anything after this?
I would ask God just what I'm gonna have for dinner tonight, because as long as I have a meal, that's all I'm happy with. What am I supposed to be doing? So not anything too crazy, just wish I put my effort.
To stop all war in the world and to stay my parents alive.
Why is there evil in the world?
What's his favorite food?
What would I ask God? I would say, God, can you fix Haiti? Because Haiti's broken. And people love you. And there's no hope for Haiti. That's my question to you.
Have I done enough?
I'd love to get his perspective about me. Because I know all my faults. I know all my defects. I know all the things that I've done. And for me, it doesn't measure up that he would choose me to carry out the things that he's asked me to carry out. So I would like to know, I would want to ask him, of all the people you had a choice to choose from, why would you choose me?
Why can't we see things differently? Or why are we so different and can't realize that we're one?
Which religion is the right one?
Why is there war? What was the reason for the war? I mean, because think about Syria and other places. Maybe they don't believe God, but they are children. They are God's children, but why they still suffer such a pain?
I don't think I'd ask him any questions. I have no questions to ask God.
I guess I would ask the question, you're trying to understand why certain people have certain types of lives, and certain people have their lives cut short, and certain people don't have their lives cut short, and why goodness doesn't seem to overwhelm evil, and you know, if God's up there, how can he just let that all go on and be a little upside down?
From why did you make mosquitoes? And what is your favorite food? To what about Syria? Aren't they your children? To why are some people dealt with this hand and other people are dealt with this hand? To are you real? Our questions are wide and vast and diverse. Some of us are asking the questions that are fun and lighthearted. Why did dinosaurs exist? What is your favorite food? Why are giraffes so awkward? And those questions are brilliant. Some of us are asking and challenging God and looking around the world and seeing all of the pain, all of the suffering, all of the sickness and disease and war and all of the ugliness towards each other. And we challenge God, where are you, God? Where are you in this? And those questions are brilliant. And some of us are in a space of unknown. We don't know. We don't know, is God good? Is God vengeful? Is God real? And friends, those questions are brilliant too. And for those of us who don't quite understand because our faith is so sure, when you wrap in your arms the people who are questioning and you say, well, those are our people. They are our family. They are our community. That's beautiful. You see, Peter lived, and oh, what a life. It was passionate, it was inquisitive, it was holy. There were moments of joy, moments of healing, and there were moments of unspeakable darkness in which Peter wrestled with God. I talked to my 9-year-old cousin, Hannah, this week about the story of Peter, and she summarized it perfectly. Peter didn't fail. Peter was learning. And as we take a seat at Peter's spot at the table, we learn of this marvelous, magnificent God. A God who is big enough for the questions. A God who is safe enough for the challenges. A God who is loving enough for the doubts. As a community of this incredible God, may we be big enough, safe enough, loving enough for each other too.